It's the 7th of November 1984, and Margaret Thatcher's government is in trouble. The diary of Lieutenant Narendra Sethia is all over the media, and Tam Dyel MP has turned the sinking of the Belgrano into a national scandal. In the pages of the London Review of Books and beyond, Dyel has used the diary to shine a light on all the discrepancies in the official version of the sinking, forcing the government into a series of embarrassing admissions. A second whistleblower, Ministry of Defence insider Clive Ponting, is awaiting trial for leaking more documents to Dyel which confirm the diary's account. Just when you think things can't get any worse for the government, the Daily Mirror splashes its front page with another Belgrano exclusive.
Belgrano sensation. Killer subs logbook missing. The Ministry of Defence confirmed yesterday that the control room log of HMS Conqueror, the nuclear submarine which sank the Belgrano, has been mislaid. This shocking disclosure will gravely embarrass the Secretary of State, Michael Heseltine.
The control room logbook is HMS Conqueror's detailed record of passage, filled in every hour of every day by the officer of the watch, logging the course, engine speed and depth of the submarine, as well as any other significant events. Its classification is confidential. Tam Dyel first called for the logbooks to be made available to fellow MPs 2 years ago, suspecting that, like the diary, it too would contradict the government's narrative. As the Daily Mirror exclusive puts it, the logbooks have been the subject of intense political controversy ever since. The idea that they could have been mislaid seems inconceivable.
Order! Secretary of State.
Later that same day, the Minister of Defence, Michael Heseltine, is forced to make a statement to Parliament, confirming the Daily Mirror's story.
During the Falklands campaign, HMS Conqueror kept a control room log. It has been mislaid. A board of inquiry is being held. I can confirm that I do not yet have the full facts as to the loss of this document, and that is one of the matters to which the Board of Inquiry is appropriately addressing itself.
I cannot be. Is the government simply incompetent? Or is this further proof of a conspiracy? Is the MOD destroying evidence? Is there more that they're trying to hide?
Mr. Denzel Davis.
Shadow Defence Minister Denzel Davis takes up the attack against Michael Heseltine.
His astonishing admission is another extraordinary episode in this government's pathetic attempts, in fact, to explain away all the circumstances surrounding the sinking of the General Belgrano. Either it has been lost through gross incompetence, or in fact, it has been stolen by someone who thinks the details contained in that logbook are embarrassing not only to Her Majesty's government, but to the Prime Minister personally.
Heseltine appears scheming, underhand and ridiculous all at the same time. Until he can identify a thief, a traitor, then this all looks like a cover-up. The Ministry of Defence launches a huge investigation. Naval security searches over 20 separate locations, everywhere, from military headquarters at Northwood to the records office at Hayes. But the logbooks are nowhere to be found.
I was very familiar with the logbook because I was one of the watchkeeping officers that used to keep the logbook. 12 hours a day, I would write and initial it and put in course, speed, depth, number of revolutions on the shaft, a certain the other. And then on another page, there were general observations and comments.
Naval security are already investigating the leaking of the diary. And now, Sethia's fingerprints are all over the logbooks too. Looking through Naval Security's case file, I found something that made me suspicious of Sethia's story for the first time. On the day that Heseltine made his announcement, Naval Security received a tip-off.
We're going to show you some of these documents now. They were actually enclosures within the papers of the official inquiry when it happened.
Ah, right, okay.
Let's look at them.
Yes, I'm intrigued.
The tip-off concerns a man called Richard Morley, who claims he knows where the logbooks are. Sethia served with Morley in the late 70s. The two knew each other well.
Here we are. This is dated the 7th of November, 1984.
Who's this written?
So this guy is giving evidence to the inquiry.
I read a transcript of the tip-off to Sethia.
Now, this is important. Morley, he told me that he knew a man who had been one of the officers of the Conqueror during the Falklands campaign, including the Belgrano sinking. He went on to say that this officer currently had in his possession a log of the Conqueror's movements during the Belgrano affair. Morley stated that X, you, wished to make public the record above, since X believed that the Conqueror's movements around the time of the sinking were different to those communicated by the government.
I had never written or intimated or said such a thing.
On the 4th of June 1983, X was not willing to publicise the record until he had obtained exemption from the law to do
that
so.
That is absolutely untrue.
To avoid prosecution under the Official Secrets Act.
That is absolutely bullshit.
Morley informed me that X had been in contact with an MP to try to arrange such exemption.
I'm sorry, I'm a little bit speechless. This is lie after lie after lie, of which I was unaware.
I inquired which MP, and Morley replied, Tam Diel.
All right. Well, I expected that that was going to be the man mentioned, but I'd never done any such thing.
That is a serious allegation, which completely contravenes everything you've said. You went directly to Dale.
It's a pack of fucking lies, if I may put it like that. And I'm a bit shocked at my way of responding. I've never seen anything like this. I wasn't aware that this type of thing. I'm speechless.
According to this tip-off, Richard Morley is alleging that Sethia stole the logbooks and then worked with DL to blow the whistle.
No, he has a whole narrative that absolutely contradicts what you've said.
Sorry, excuse my repetition, but this... I had to shut up for a bit, I think.
Naval Security decides, quote, on the balance of probability, that Morley is telling the truth. Morley doesn't give up Sethia's name, but it doesn't matter. Naval Security have already worked out who he's referring to. Sethia is now on the hook for two crimes, two breaches of the Official Secrets Act, as the author of the diary, and the logbook thief. I'm Andrew O'Hagan, and from the London Review of Books, this is the Belgrano Diary. Episode 5. The Hounds. Richard Morley is one of this story's wild cards.
Thanks so much for taking the time to speak to us today.
There are lots of outlandish rumours about him.
Hopefully the internet is working.
As with all enigmas, we found him on LinkedIn.
I'm ready whenever you guys are, so I'm...
He's now a successful businessman living in Berlin. We arrange a video call.
Okay, Richard, while serving on HMS Brighton around 76 to 77, you met Narendra Sethia for the first time. What was he like? Can you tell us about Seth?
Well, he came from a very wealthy background. He wasn't really a dedicated naval officer. He was very much a would-be gentleman. He was a bon viveur, you might say. Enjoyed life and didn't take it too seriously.
Morley's allegation is that the diary is essentially a fabrication, written up after the war using the information contained in the logbooks.
He'd lied about the writing of the diary because it is impossible to write a diary contemporaneously over such a long period of time, so many entries, with the same pen, with the same hand without ever really making a mistake. Nothing crossed out.
When I first read the diary, I noticed this too. There are no edits, no corrections.
I simply don't believe he could have written everything that's in that diary in front of all the other officers whilst all this was going on. I don't believe that.
In the summer of 1982, Molly says that Sethia called him after returning from the Falklands.
He told me that he had a diary. He told me straight away that the Belgrano was outside the exclusion zone and was sailing home.
And he said, "Now I've got some other very interesting stuff." And in the list of stuff was the logbooks.
Sethia doesn't deny that this phone call took place, but he remembers the conversation differently.
We got along fairly well. I stayed in touch with Morley. He was one of my very few civilian friends. I'm sure that I did probably tell him, but yeah, I kept a diary. Absolutely.
Well, there's no probably about it. He knows. He certainly knows that you kept a diary.
I probably told him. I have no problem with that at all. But I've never, ever used the word log. I'm in shock. Seriously.
When he told me he had the material, I felt that it would be very interesting to know exactly what happened. The moment that the Belgrano had been sunk, I was suspicious. And so consequently, shall we say, I was interested to know the truth.
Morley told us that he always thought the war was deliberately orchestrated by Thatcher. He says the reason he got involved in the logbook story was because he wanted them returned to Parliament and a truthful account of the 2nd of May established. But when he spoke with Naval Security, he was warned that if he didn't help the MOD retrieve the logs, then they would make his life very difficult.
I was being threatened with the same sort of security nightmare that people can go through. I was obviously threatened with that. But on the other hand, I do feel that one has to do the right thing. And just because one is being intimidated doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to give in to that intimidation.
After being interrogated by Naval Security, Molly says that he then contacted Tam Dyel.
I had many telephone calls with Tam Dyel, but the first one was very much Parliament must know.
Dyel told him to contact the press immediately because, quote, if you don't, then you will be in danger.
He warned me that he'd had information from his contacts in the Ministry of Defence that I was endangered. And he said, for certain, that there is an order to eliminate me, to deal with me, take me out. Oh, yes, he was very clear about that.
This is some claim. But Dyel did later confirm to a journalist that he made the call and issued the warning.
I mean, it is a bit daunting to know that people are trying to kill you.
I went to Paris once and saw a statue of Mephistopheles. Richard Morley reminded me of this statue.
This is Stuart Prebble, who worked at the Current Affairs TV programme, World in Action. He's one of the journalists Morley contacts after Dyel's warning.
He was literally hiding around corners, sort of speaking in code. I mean, it was a time when people tended to be a bit paranoid about the activities of the state, but he carried it to an extraordinary degree.
Morley also visits David Lee of The Observer, the journalist who broke the story of Ponting's arrest.
Morley was full of an air of sombre excitement because he was in possession of this tremendously important information.
And what was he offering you?
The identity of the diarist.
As distinct from the logbooks?
No, as also as the purloiner of the logbooks.
Both Lee and Prebble are chasing the next Belgrano scoop. The MOD knows Sethia's identity. Richard Morley knows too. But all the journalists are still in the dark. The disappearance of the logbooks only fuels the urgency to find him.
It was like a light bulb went off in our heads because We knew about the diary which was floating about, which was apparently, you know, chapter and verse from somebody inside the submarine, that the content of the diary, as it were, could only have been drawn from the logbook, because that's where you would get all the details about, you know, height, periscope, depth, all the rest of it. And so to us, it was like a dramatic moment. So if we find the author of the diary, he will also have been the one who purloined the logbook.
Without giving a name or a location, Morley says he can lead the journalists to the logbook thief. But finding him, he says, will involve travel to another continent.
And you have to make a call about, are you going to give this a whirl? Are you going to go with them? And very often they turn out to be right. And if you don't make mistakes, you're not going to get anywhere. So I made a call about Morley that he was on to something. And he was on to something.
Stuart Prebble is more sceptical.
It was always possible that he had a couple of pieces of information that we very badly wanted, but it was always with a strong sense that we'd have to be vigilant in checking out anything that he told us. You could never get a straight answer of any kind to any question.
I can remember him being highly overexcited and dragging me to Amsterdam, and indeed saying we had to fly to Martinique on the spot because that's where Sethia was. You have to remember, everything's being done at very high speed. This is like, I don't know, Monday or Tuesday, and I've got a paper that's going to come out on the Sunday.
It's been barely more than a week since Heseltine announced that the logbooks are missing, and Lee is already on a plane to Martinique hunting for the thief. There's only one problem. Sethia doesn't live in Martinique.
When we get there, it's perfectly obvious that he isn't there, and Morley doesn't know.
Stuart Prebble is also on his way to the Caribbean, but he's heading to St. Lucia.
I was wearing a suit, and everybody else on the plane was a honeymoon couple. I arrived at St. Lucia, and I was asking, is there a British former naval officer working in the area by the name of Sethia?
Stuart Prebble has quietly outmaneuvered Lee. Skeptical of Morley, he's gone direct to Tam Diel, and Diel has shared what little information he can about the diarist that came from Simon O'Keefe.
Tam Diel worked out the next best way of developing the story was for the author of the diary to be identified. So he gave me a piece of paper that had the words Sethia, St. Lucia. That's all it said. And I was lucky. I came across somebody who said, I think there's a guy who answers that description working in Rodney Bay.
Rodney Bay is on St. Lucia's northern coast.
The only thing you could see was a disused container from the back of a cargo lorry with the doors open.
There was a tap on the entrance of the ship's container, which was my office, and I was on the telephone at the time, and I turned around and saw a tall, very untanned English fellow, rather formally dressed in a suit and tie, standing there and saying, "Are you Mr. Sethia?" And naturally I responded and said, "No, I'm not actually, I'm Mr. Sethia." And he sort of smiled and apologised and introduced himself as a gentleman called Stuart Prebble.
Well, he plainly needed a haircut, had a beard, but spoke with a very surprising cut-glass English accent.
At first, I sort of assumed immediately that, oh my gosh, he's got to be a policeman or something. But very quickly, he then handed me a letter which was addressed to me personally and had a seal on it. And I broke the seal, and it was from a Scottish titled man, Sir Tam Diel.
From the pages of the diary, DL has been privy to Sethia's most intimate thoughts for months, but Sethia's never even heard of him. This handwritten letter with an old-fashioned wax seal is their first contact.
The letter was fairly brief and said to me that he felt that he knew me from my eloquently written diary and was introducing me to the gentleman carrying the letter and basically left it at that and said any help that I could give to the gentleman would be greatly appreciated.
The fact that somebody had come halfway around the world with a copy of his diary asking him to appear in a television programme was genuinely surprising to him and a bit horrifying.
I wanted to be very careful. And at first I basically said to him, look, you've come all the way here. I'll buy you a beer. And then let's call it quits. I didn't want to get involved.
Preble is within a whisker of the biggest scoop of his career. He tells Sethia about Lee and Morley. Sethia may want to stay out of the limelight, but whether he likes it or not, it's coming to him.
I think he warmed to the idea because he became aware that I would be followed by a lot of other journalists. And, you know, I offered him the opportunity to put his side of the story ahead of what might otherwise be written.
I agreed that the best way to put this to rest is let's go back with him.
Meanwhile, David Lee is lost in La Mancha, or is it Manchester? Or Machu Picchu? Or Martinique?
Morley was bullshitting about knowing where Sethia was.
I mean, how did it become obvious? Did you go to hotels and businesses and ask around? I mean, just take us through it.
I think that Morley was frantically making phone calls at that point. And by the time we landed, it was... I think Morley must have confessed that he wasn't there. He didn't know where he was.
Morley insisted to us that he did know that Sethia was in St. Lucia and not Martinique, but that he was still not ready to give this information to Lee. What we can say for certain is that among the frantic telephone calls Morley makes, there are a series to the Director of Naval Security, a man called Rear Admiral William Lang. We have seen Admiral Lang's record of these conversations. Morley says that, quote, undesirable hounds are trying to lay their hands on the logbooks, and that if this continues, Sethia might allow the document to fall into the hands of amateur political groups. He tries to convince Lang to offer Sethia money. Lang refuses. The following day, there are more calls. Morley says that he's about to lose control of the situation and that, quote, his sponsors are threatening to pull out.
So the thing that's a mystery to me, really, is given that you were a close friend of Sethia's, why then did you allow yourself to become useful to the MOD in their effort to find the logs and to prosecute the person who'd taken them? Didn't you feel that your first loyalty was to your friend?
No. My first loyalty is to the people of Great Britain. I'm a citizen of Great Britain. My first loyalty is to the people, to Parliament. It has to be. I mean, even if my friend has committed a crime, I'm sorry, but I must act in accordance with my conscience.
We told David Lee about the phone calls between Morley and Naval Security.
Were you aware then that Morley was also working with the Ministry of Defence?
No, I didn't know. Morley wasn't sharing every one of his antics with me.
We've later discovered that he was, and we have transcripts of telephone conversations that he had with individuals there, and he was in fact feeding back to them all the time.
Well, that would have appealed to Morley's sense of self-importance, I guess. And my recollection is that he presented himself at the time as a great patriot. He thought that Sethia was a bad egg because he had stolen this log. I mean, that wasn't my view or the view of the journalists on The Observer. We were, as always, what we were after was information.
We spoke with Richard Morley for hours, and I'm still trying to work out exactly what he was up to.
Did you not feel that to some extent you were running with the hare and the hounds, that you were helping the media get to a story that would ultimately be a story about the Thatcher government's bad behaviour? And at the same time, you were in conversation with Admiral Lang, the hare and the hounds, no?
Yes, but if you want the hounds to keep off your back, you communicate with them in order to basically assuage them. Yeah, I was playing a cloak and dagger game because I was trying to protect my source at the beginning, but at the same time, wanting to put the documents in the safe hands of Parliament, and at the same time, not wanting to be assassinated by the security services.
As well as calls to Admiral Lang, Morley also contacts Sethia's mother.
She let me know about this, saying she'd had a call from a chap called Morley, saying that I was in great danger and was to go to ground.
According to Sethia, Morley told his mother that he was working for the First Sea Lord, the professional head of the Royal Navy.
Sethia told us that at that very moment you were making what he described as pestering phone calls to his mother and his family. Is that true?
Yes. I think pestering is a little rhetorical, but the point is I knew he had committed a serious criminal offence. I'm also aware of the fact that calls can be monitored.
Were you enjoying yourself, Richard?
Sorry?
Were you enjoying yourself?
No. No, one does not enjoy oneself in this situation when you know that people are trying to kill you or whatever.
Sethia is in no mood for Morley's protection. He knows from Preble that Morley is with another journalist. As far as he's concerned, he's being harassed.
I thought that the best thing to deal with something like this was probably to send Morley and Lee as far away as possible, which I did by contacting a lady in Miami called Alison Duncan. And I contacted Alison, and she also very well understood my slightly naughty sense of humour. And I said to her, would you mind if I give this journalist chap your phone number and tell him that, yes, I've been staying with you in Miami?
It's all a bit of a blur, and I don't enjoy remembering it. But I obviously did have an address or a phone number because I was running around Miami trying to find this girlfriend, I think. There's a point at which it dawned on me that we were being made fools of.
It was a wild goose chase.
That it was a wild goose chase and that Sethia was deliberately avoiding us. And it was very unfortunate that I realised that because it made me suspect Sethia. The more I thought, Morley's not wrong. This person is trying to hide from us because he's a guilty person.
Did it infuriate you?
Well, it exasperated me. And I didn't like the feeling that I was being monkeyed around with. And it convinced me that Sethy was a crook.
The Observer has identified a former officer...
Lee goes to press
from the submarine Conqueror
and publishes a series of articles about the missing logbooks.
Missing log was taken by crew. Conqueror log moved out of Britain. Officer's war diary revealed.
He doesn't name Sethia, but he may as well.
The officer is the author of a day-by-day diary kept on the submarine. He knows the contents of the missing logbook.
Clearly identifying the officer in question as someone who retired from the Navy in 1982 and who is now working in the Caribbean... Anybody with any connection to HMS Conqueror will know exactly who Lee is referring to. What's more, across a huge double-page spread, The Observer publishes 8 complete entries from the diary, from the 29th of April to the 6th of May.
I was trying to get to the bottom of something that was clearly in the public interest to discover the facts. And I'd sought to verify it. I'd gone to extreme lengths of jumping on planes flying all over the shop to get hold of Sethia in order to put these allegations to him to see what he would have to say. So I did my duty as I saw it. And the fact that Sethia wanted to play practical jokes on Morley was a piece of bad behaviour which backfired on him because it made my suspicions concrete that maybe he had pinched the log.
Lee got a story, if not the story he was looking for. Preble has the scoop and quietly smuggles Sethia back to the UK to film an interview. He puts him up at his home in Manchester and then arranges a secret meeting to introduce his journalistic prize to those political figures who had been agitating against Thatcher's conduct of the war, including Tam Dyel.
And we shook hands. He said he was delighted to meet me. And I think Dyel ordered sherry. Seriously, a glass of sherry. He really was a baronet. But a nice one.
Dyel's whole campaign against Thatcher has pivoted on the revelations in Sethia's diary, but this is the only time they meet. A handful of Dyel's allies are with him, including a prominent anti-nuclear activist and a professor of peace studies.
One small part of my mind as a still relatively recently retired naval officer was that these are all left-wing assholes who are just trying to find a reason to show that the government's lying because they don't like wars. However, that was very short-lived because the factual information that flowed, and my feeling of these are all, you know, left-wingers and this sort of blood of crap, started flying out of the window pretty swiftly as I heard the many bits of proof and statements and did you know that this happened and that happened and on that date and on that date and all this type of factual stuff.
It's November the 27th, 3 weeks since Heseltine announced that the logs were missing. Next stop, a secret location to film an interview. This is Sethia's chance to set the record straight.
Tonight, World in Action has the first interview with any officer from the submarine. Lieutenant Narendra Sethia left the Navy shortly after his submarine returned to England.
Sitting with Sethia in St. Vincent, we played him the World in Action programme.
Mr. Sethia, did you leak your diary to any Member of Parliament or to the media?
No, I did not.
No. Did you take any log from the submarine Conqueror?
No, I did not.
Do you have any information about who took it or where it is?
None whatsoever.
How likely?
I was fucking nervous. I wanted to be extremely careful, and in fact, I think you can see it in my countenance, the way the eyes are, the way I almost never move. I don't look relaxed, and that's probably one of the reasons I've got my hands actually crossed together under one crossed knee, rather than sitting back, looking comfortable and really relaxed.
Discharged, and a number of seconds later, the order was again given fire. And a third weapon was discharged.
There then elapsed a period of seconds before the first...
Well, it's interesting the way I was speaking. Very careful in classification. A period of seconds. I'm being very, very careful about my choice of language so as not to actually say something that could be deemed to be classified information a certain number of miles away, a few seconds after discharge, but without specifying the precise numbers. And I can see, looking back on this many, many years later, I haven't seen this for so many years, that my way of speaking is not entirely open.
This is the interview that every investigative journalist in the country wanted. And now, the story of Sethia's diary is out in the open. Seeing the young Lieutenant Sethia in the footage, it's clear he feels he is now the hunted one, the one who chooses his words carefully, the whistleblower.
You've said, basically, that the Belgrano was behaving in a way that made her a sitting duck.
I personally don't feel that it was a threat.
Would you like the full truth of this experience to come out?
Yes, I would, very much.
Could you describe his state of mind at that point? He was suddenly surrounded, one would imagine, with potential danger.
I think he was genuinely confused and alarmed by the turn of events. I mean, plainly, coming to the UK made himself more available to be arrested. You know, potentially he was open to being charged with a breach of the Official Secrets Act, for which he could go to prison.
Sethia is no longer the anonymous diarist. He is now the public face of Falkland's dissent and a former officer. His diary has already been classified top secret Umbra. And in a meeting with Margaret Thatcher, the Defence Secretary, Michael Heseltine, says that you have to view the case of Sethia alongside Clive Ponting, the MOD civil servant who leaked documents to DL. As the minutes of the meeting record, quote, "It would be hard to justify proceeding against Mr. Ponting if the government were unwilling to use all the means in its power to prevent publication of the Sethia diary." The Director of Public Prosecutions confirms that there is clear evidence that Sethia has breached the Official Secrets Act, and he's still the prime suspect for the missing logbooks. I mean, I want to make sure that we don't leave this island not having asked you straightforwardly and point blank, do you know what happened to the logbooks?
No. It was impossible that I had taken the batch of logs. I'd left the submarine in mid-July, and the period of the missing logbooks covered a period up to that event. So it was actually impossible.
The point at which the logbook went missing, or was taken, or was intentionally sent on, came after the period where you had left the ship. So any suggestion that you could have removed them is simply exploded at that point.
That's exactly right.
Well, as barristers say, that concludes my questions for the witness at this point.
Can I go back to jail now, sir?
So Sethia simply couldn't have stolen the logbooks. They were sighted in a control room locker on HMS Conqueror several months after he had left the Navy, and after the phone call with Morley, in which he supposedly bragged about taking them. Naval security knew all of this as far back as their very first meeting with Morley, and yet they still concluded that he must be telling the truth.
My God, people have been found guilty before when they weren't guilty. What will happen to me? I really don't want to spend the next 10 years in jail.
Admiral Lang squares the circle by deciding that a third party must have passed the logs to Sethia. Some things are simply too good not to be true.
I had a message from my brother B saying that Admiral Lang had called him and said they were trying to find me and were intimating that I was in hiding, which, to me, seemed very, very extraordinary.
Your brother must have been pretty alarmed by that.
My brother was shocked and everything, but obviously I wasn't in hiding, and it seemed a very odd phone call.
Sethia agrees to an interview with Naval Security. What he doesn't know is that Admiral Lang is now working with the Serious Crime Squad. The Director of Public Prosecutions requires a police report before he can decide to prosecute and has instructed Detective Chief Superintendent Ron Hardy of New Scotland Yard to investigate both charges against Sethia. Hardy says that he will, and I quote, muster as much evidence as he can. He meets with Admiral Lang the day before Sethia's interview and they agree that Lang will question him first and then hand him over.
I sat right opposite him at his desk and I could see a copy of the diary. It was very well copied. I recognised my handwriting and every page was classified top secret, Umbra being an additional code word.
And he proceeded to ask you about it?
He handed me a copy of it and said, did you write this diary? And I said, yes. And he was thumbing through it. But his primary question was not about the Belgrano or security. It was, who is P? Because I'd taken a fancy for one of the ratings on board and used to go out with him. Only go out and have a few beers, no more than that, I assure you.
But you'd mentioned in a page of the diary that you were thinking about him and missing him one day. Yes?
Correct. He wasn't on this patrol, he was on leave. And I had referred to him a lot.
So let's take our time. This is a very stressful situation and a very stressful week. You now find yourself in the Ministry of Defence before an Admiral Lang, and then he proceeds to ask you questions of a highly personal nature.
That's correct. And he asked me, do you realise that homosexuality is illegal in the Navy? And I was so angry, not only with my most personal thoughts, which are my diary, and when that is exposed without your knowledge, imagine how any human being would feel. It's as though your heart has been exposed.
Well, what a combination to have that feeling of dreadful exposure of a personal kind next to the fear that you might have broken the Official Secrets Act.
Yes, it was not only the fear of breaking the Official Secrets Act, which had never been my intention, but also now being stamped upon and told about homosexuality in the Navy, because I had mentioned that I missed what was called an oppo, a mate, on board. I was so furious that I looked at him and said that I refused to answer any more of your questions. I think that my words were something along the lines of, I find you rather disgusting, sir. He went quiet, raised his nose.
Astonishing. Is it possible for you to venture a view about whether this question about homosexuality was part of a, what you would now understand to be a sort of harassment, that whether or not you had broken the Official Secrets Act and whether or not it was your fault that this diary was now in the public place, were they, in a sense, using this language threateningly?
My feeling of Lang's questioning was that we need to get him on something. And because we can't get him right now, not yet, not until the police have had him, because we can't get him on the breach of official secrets, let's see what else we can get him on.
Well, this is part of my personal interest in this, that the two individuals, you being one, Clive Poynting arguably being another, were two of the most correct individuals in this story in terms of following through on telling the truth, sticking with the facts as far as they understood them.
Absolutely.
The fact that this is a story deeper than people realise, perhaps, where the individuals who tell the truth get punished.
You had sort of taken the words from my mouth, but what I was about to say was that, having already said that we have to get those chaps out here for whatever it may be, there has to be a way that we can stamp on one man, because when his face is on the front page of the newspaper, then all of the real bad people can relax and say it's all right, they've got the culprit.
Admiral Lang presses a button on his desk and two plainclothes policemen walk into the room.
And Lang then looked at me, barely in the eyes, and just said, you're to go with these gentlemen now. They will be taking you down to New Scotland Yard for more questions.
Ron Hardy and his partner, Sergeant Mike Ashdown, escort Sethia out of the room. We had hoped to interview them both, but Ashdown died in 2018 and Hardy in 2021.
Hardy was very polite, very amiable, and I believe I was even offered a cup of tea. And we sat down there with Sergeant Ashdown taking notes. And the very first thing that Hardy did was to show me a small piece of paper with my signature on it, the Official Secrets Act, dated September 1974, that I had signed when I joined the Navy. And he said, do you recognise this piece of paper? And I told him yes, and he said, is that your signature? Yes. The entire interview lasted for about 2 hours and was pretty exhausting. It was about who had I shown my diary to, and are you aware that it is against naval regulations to record classified information in a personal diary?
And you said?
My answer was, it was never for dissemination. And the reason they had given it to this man O'Keefe was purely for a private thing between myself and his father.
Did you also make the point to them that this was also written in full public view, often at the mess table surrounded by senior officers?
Absolutely, yes, including the view of the captain of the submarine, sitting at the wardroom table every day. Every officer and steward on board that submarine would have told you, yes, we used to see Seth writing his diary in the open every day. There was nothing hidden about it.
They don't charge Seth here, but he has now positively identified the diary as his own. This is still just evidence gathering, and before any action can be taken, the Director of Public Prosecutions has to decide whether bringing charges is in the public interest.
So, no arrest, no charge?
No, I was released, and that's when I then went to a restaurant and met my friend Emma Field. We were sitting in an upstairs room, I think about 11 or 12 of us, but two people came in, a woman and a man in a white shirt and black trousers. I can remember very, very clearly thinking, you think they're off-duty policemen? Which made me feel rather paranoid is perhaps not the word, but that's how I felt in some ways.
Sethia keeps an eye on the couple at the neighbouring table. He's starting to doubt himself, to imagine threats where they don't exist. Or is he really being followed?
Emma had several acquaintances there that I had not met. And one of them was a Nigerian church minister. A couple of days afterwards, this fellow called Emma and said he'd been taken in by police and questioned and asked, how do you know those people?
Only 3 weeks have passed since the MOD first got the tip-off from Morley. 3 weeks in which Sethia's life has turned upside down. His trip to London hasn't put the story to rest, as he'd hoped. He packs his bags and heads back to St. Lucia.
I actually ran away and went onto the east coast of the island and hung out on the beach there with a packet of cigarettes and a radio, thinking, Jesus, what the fuck is going on in my life? And all I really wanted to do was to put my head under a pillow and go and hide.
Sethia goes underground, hoping that everything will blow over, but the Belgrano story is going nowhere. Over the next 2 months, his diary continues to circulate widely in the media. The logbook mystery is still gathering column inches too. Richard Morley is quoted in the Daily Mail, saying he fears that they could be sold to the Russians. On the horizon is the trial of the MOD whistleblower, Clive Ponting. The government has staked its credibility on a guilty verdict, and as the new year breaks and Sethia returns to his ramshackle office on the beach, he's about to discover that his fate is intertwined with Ponting's.
And I remember again sitting in my ship's container office with BBC Radio announcing that there were Scotland Yard police in the Caribbean, and looking through the window and suddenly almost passing out with shock.
Walking along the golden sand is Ron Hardy of New Scotland Yard and his amiable sidekick, Mike Ashdown. Two officers walking with purpose towards him. Next time on the Belgrano Diary.
It was a serious offence and had to be prosecuted under the Official Secrets Act. Discipline had to be exerted.
He didn't have a defence on the facts, really, because he'd done it. He'd done what he was accused of doing.
Here we have this man who cannot distinguish between ambiguity and truth.
And Mr Justice Boreham says, have you reached a verdict? Do you find for the plaintiff or the defendant? At which point I sort of collapsed.
The Belgrano Diary is a production from the documentary team at the London Review of Books. If you liked this episode, please leave a rating and a review wherever you listened. This helps other listeners find the show. Episode 6, The Trials, will be available next Thursday, May the 2nd. You don't need to wait to listen to the rest of this series. If you click on the link in the show notes, you can access all the episodes right now, as well as hours of extended interviews. You can read a collection of the magazine's coverage of the Falklands War and the politics of the early 1980s on our website. There's a link to this in the show notes, where you will also find a list of the archival audio used in this episode. The series producer was Richard Carling. Ben Walker was the producer, and Zach Brophy, the story editor. Original music and sound design by Joel Cox. Additional voice work by Patrick Kennedy and Duncan Wilkins. I'm Andrew O'Hagan.